This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Amanda Banks, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Amanda Banks.
And I'm Scott Kump. Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now the pro-life news.
This from CitizenLink. A crisis pregnancy center in Montgomery County, Maryland, may continue to help mothers and their babies without being forced to post government-mandated signs. A county law required what it called limited-service pregnancy centers to post information noting that a medical professional is not on staff. According to the Alliance Defending Freedom, the county crafted the law so that it did not apply to abortion sellers, such as Planned Parenthood. Centro Tepeyac Silver Springs Women's Center filed suit against the law in 2010. On May 7th of this year, the county decided not to appeal a lower court ruling that struck down the law. According to Alliance Defending Freedom senior legal counsel Matt Bowman, quote, "The court in this case rightly found no justification for the government to force pro-life centers to speak a message designed to drive women away," close quote. In the lower court opinion, Judge Deborah K. Chassanaugh pointed to a lack of evidence presented by those who accuse the pregnancy centers of misinforming pregnant women. She also noted that such accusations came solely from abortion activists. To read the court order, go to adfmedia.org. This month, May 2014, marks the 10-year anniversary of I Choose Life News and Views. Call the station you're hearing this program on and thank them for airing I Choose Life News and Views. And stay tuned to future programs for information on opportunities you will have to celebrate this milestone with us.
Abby Johnson, a former Planned Parenthood director, announced in April that her ministry, And Then There Were None, has helped more than 100 abortion workers leave the industry. The ministry was started in 2012 to provide emotional and financial support, spiritual guidance, and legal counsel to abortion facility workers leaving the industry. The long-term goal of And Then There Were None is to dry up the pool of abortion workers so that facilities have to shut down because they can't find employees. One way the ministry reaches workers is through flyers. Johnson told her supporters, "We know that the abortion industry is absolutely terrified of our ministry. In fact, we've been told recently that Planned Parenthood has been calling in their employees one by one to ask questions about their possible affiliation with our organization. You can learn more about And Then There Were None at their website, atwn.org. You're up to date with the local culture of life. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
Regular listeners to our program have probably heard us mention the name Kermit Gosnell on occasion. He was the infamous, we should say, abortionist in Philadelphia who was prosecuted and convicted for murdering live babies. You may have even heard us talk recently about a possible Kermit Gosnell movie documenting what went on there. And I actually have one of the filmmakers on the phone with me, Philip McAleer. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. It's great to be on.
Now, you and your wife are from Ireland originally, but you've been in, I believe, California for 4 years as filmmakers.
That's right, yes. Well, we've been filmmakers a lot longer than that. We were journalists, and then we started making films about 10 years ago.
Okay. Some people may have heard of your film, Frack Nation.
Yes, Frack Nation, which looked at a lot of the myths and allegations and bogus lawsuits around fracking. And, you know, looked for the science behind these allegations and found a lot of exaggeration. And the fracking is overwhelmingly safe, a safe process.
And you originally had another project in mind when you changed gears, so to speak, and decided you wanted to do this movie about Gosnell, right?
Yeah, I mean, we had other projects. We even had funding. And this was the one project that was keeping us awake at night. This is the one project that was obsessing us. So we phoned up, probably the first time in the history of filmmaking, we phoned up an investor and said, "We're sending you your money back. We can't use it at this time in good conscience. We're going to be doing another project." So it was the Gosnell project, and we were very clear we wanted to raise the money through crowdfunding because we wanted to send a message to the mainstream media, a message to Hollywood that people want this film made, that there is a market out there, because there's allegations that people don't want to see this on TV or aren't interested, or the debate is over, or there is no debate. And we thought, there is, and people will want to send that message. And they have. Almost 20,000 people now have sent that message.
Wow. Now, you mentioned crowdfunding. Perhaps we should explain what that is.
Yeah, crowdfunding is basically, there's a couple of crowdfunding websites where, well, as a filmmaker, I go on and I say, I want to make a film with this or that. In this case, the Kermit Gosnell story. Would you fund it for me, please? And you'll get rewards like DVDs or invitations to the premiere. And we did it with Frack Nation. We asked for $150,000 to make the documentary. We got $212,000. On this case, we asked for $2.1 million, and we're almost there. We're almost there. So it's the biggest crowdfunding project ever on the Indiegogo website. It's actually a world record crowdfunding effort. And I think that's a good example of what crowdfunding should be about. It's a good example that there is demand for the truth about Kermit Gosnell, that people want to see that on their TV. They're tired of media covering up these stories. They're tired of Hollywood not reporting their life experiences, not reporting their values. And they've decided to take it into their own hands, and 20,000 people, more than 20,000 people, have now funded this through small donations.
As far as the crowdfunding goes, you have a date as a deadline that you have to have raised all of the funds by that date, or you don't get any of it. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
And
yep.
That is what?
That's Monday.
Monday, May 12th. Yes.
Monday, May 12th at midnight. If we don't get $2.1 million by that time, every penny goes back to the original funders. The funders don't lose a penny. So if we don't get, if we get $2 million by Monday, then every penny goes back. Every penny of that $2 million goes back to the original funder. So we have to hit the 2.1 or the film will never be made.
Most of our listeners are hearing this for the first time either on the Saturday or the Sunday prior to that mm-hmm. Monday deadline. It first goes online on Monday, will go online on Monday, May 12th. So some of you may be listening to this on yes. Monday. So it's now or never.
Yeah, no, it's now or never. I mean, but I learned a lot when I started this campaign. There was a couple of charitable things that I wanted to give money to, and I thought, oh, I must do that, I must get around to that, or someone else will do it. And when I started this, the first thing I did was I went to those charities and I gave what I wanted to give, because I know that if you don't do it, if I don't do it, nobody will. You know, why should I be relying on anybody else? And I suppose that's what I'm saying to people out there. You know, don't think, oh, that's a good idea, that's a good cause, that's something worth giving. And the great thing about crowdfunding is you can give $1, $10, $100, $25, $500, whatever you want. Don't think that's a good cause, someone else will do it. You know, go and do it. And if we've hit our total, go and give whatever you can anyway, because it's very important. Even give a dollar. There's two important figures in crowdfunding. It's the amount you raise, and it's the number of people who've given. We need to send a message. We need 25,000, 30,000, maybe more people funding this, because even with $1 each, because it sends a vote to the network, it sends a vote to the mainstream media, it sends a vote to Hollywood. We want these types of films made. We want these types of stories covered. We want the truth told.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Phelim McAleer, one of the filmmakers, potential filmmakers of the Kermit Gosnell movie that you probably heard about us talk about before. And again, they have a May 12th deadline to raise the funds for this film. How do they contribute? Where do they go on the web?
You just go to gosnellmovie.com. That's G-O-S-N-E-L-L. Gosnellmovie.com, and that just takes you straight to the contribution page. And there's a lot of information there. There's a lot of videos, press, other press, clippings, photographs, you know, the whole background.
Now, Phelim, you mentioned, you used the word obsession or obsessed
yes.
in talking about this film, that it was keeping you up at night. Why was that?
I was in the courtroom, and some of the things I saw were truly shocking. Some of the evidence I saw was truly shocking. And I've been a crime reporter for 20 years, but I've never seen a case like this. This is the biggest mass murderer in American history, the biggest serial killer in American history. And he was allowed to do it by inaction and by people looking the other way. You know. But then I think what was equally shocking was the empty press benches. The journalists just weren't there. And as a journalist, that was shocking. So the idea that this story would go unreported, the idea that these victims would go unmourned, unremembered forgotten, not even forgotten, never remembered, just struck me as being something that needed to be fixed. The historical record needed to be changed.
And you've talked about this before, and you've contrasted this with other stories where the media has made a bigger deal about somebody killing just one person.
Yeah, Jodi Arias. Everyone knows who Jodi Arias is. We did. If you go on gosnellmovie.com, you'll see there we did a video about Jodi Arias and Kermit Gosnell. Everyone knew who she was. Even foreigners knew who she was. No one in America knows who Kermit Gosnell is. She killed one man. Now, that was a tragedy, but it was only one man. This man killed thousands. Ted Bundy, everyone knows who that is. The Zodiac Killer. You know, Americans are fascinated with serial killers. Hollywood is fascinated with serial killers. But no one knows who Kermit Gosnell is. And that needs to change. That's a cover-up, and that cover-up needs to stop. And people need to be part of the ending the cover-up.
You know, you did not start your crowdfunding efforts through Indiegogo originally, did you?
Well, we originally wanted to go with Kickstarter, which is the biggest crowdfunding website. We originally wanted to go there, and we had our project all set up. And then they rejected us, told us that we couldn't go there. Actually, they didn't reject us. They tried to censor us and said, you can come as long as you don't tell the truth, because that would offend our community guidelines. You can read about it on the website, gosnellmovie.com. If you describe what Kermit Gosnell did, that would offend our community guidelines. So we can't have that. We can't have it. So we just said, we're not prepared to be part of a community whose community guidelines are, we don't tell the truth.
So you went to Indiegogo instead.
Yes, we went to Indiegogo, and things have worked well so far.
And again, you're really close to reaching that goal, but you're not quite there. So hopefully our listeners will respond and go to, what is it, gosnellmovie.com?
Yeah, gosnellmovie.com. Even if we are, when you're hearing this, we have hit the total, go give a dollar. It's a vote. It's a message to the network saying, I want this story to be told. That figure, the number of people who give, is almost as important as reaching the total is the most important thing. But the number of people who give, it's very important that that's a big number. So give $1 for yourself, give $1 for your wife, $1 for your friend, $1 for your children. You know, just keep giving small donations and let's get that number up.
Yes, and based on the amount given and the number of people responding, you could end up setting some records.
Yes, that's the key. We already have set records. We're the most successful, even at the moment, we're the most successful film project ever on Indiegogo. We're the third most successful film project on any crowdfunding website. We've beaten Spike Lee's attempt to raise money. James Franco, the Hollywood actor, we've beaten him as well. So we've beaten a lot of Hollywood celebrities. But if we don't reach 2.1 million, it's a failure. But we will reach that. I'm quite confident we'll reach that. But I'm more concerned that people go and give a dollar. It's very strange. I'm not asking people for a large sum of money. And, you know, if they can give it, that's great. But it's much more important to me, actually, that people now give $1 and deliver a message. It's like sending a petition.
Yes, and so we'll have to keep people posted on where you are with this. And I hope you'll join us again in the future to tell us where you are in the project and promote the film as it comes out.
Okay, that'll be great. Yeah, no, we will. We'll, at the moment, we're just focused on raising the money, but we'll come back and update your listeners.
Again, my guest today has been Phelim McAleer, one of the producers of the upcoming Gosnell film. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. All the best.
If you or someone you know is in a crisis pregnancy, help is just a phone call away. Call 877-791-5475. If you or someone you know is dealing with grief and pain after an abortion decision, whether you had an abortion, convinced someone else to have an abortion, or even participated in a procedure, call 877-791-5475. You'll be referred to a pregnancy resource center in your area, a place where free and confidential services are available. That's 877-791-5475. 877-791-5475.
I have learned recently that fully 60% of people who identify themselves as pro-life hold out an exception, though, for rape, incest, and life of the mother. And while that may sound like a compassionate position to take, I have someone from every one of those special circumstances on the program today, and it's going to make a huge difference, I think, as we hear their stories to understand the preciousness of every life, regardless of the way it was conceived. With me in the studio is Monica Kelsey of Living Exceptions. Monica, welcome.
Thank you, Kathy, for having me again.
And my very special and honored guest, Mary Schramm. Thank you for being here, Mary.
It's an honor and a privilege.
And by telephone, Christy Hofferber, who is driving across Illinois, as I understand it, as we speak. Be very careful, Christy, and hopefully we won't be too distracting for you.
Yes, thank you.
Let's start by talking about the brand new organization called Living Exceptions that was founded by Monica, who is in the studio with us today. And also part of the organization is Pam Stenzel. Pam is a very well-known name across the country as she speaks for sexual purity, but she also has a unique personal story as well. Monica, tell us about Living Exceptions, why you started it, and how things are going.
Living Exceptions, like you said, I started because I didn't want to hear people say I'm pro-life except in the cases of rape or incest. Living Exceptions is going around the country educating individuals and organizations on how they can be pro-life with no exceptions and no apologies. A lot of times people, when they're pro-life except, it's because they're misplacing their compassion. They immediately start feeling for the woman and they forget that there's a child's life that hangs in the balance. My organization is training these individuals to not misplace their compassion, to have compassion for the woman and also the child whose life hangs in the balance.
Well, we're just excited to be a part of what you're doing, Monica. And you've been a previous guest on the program, and we're certainly going to have you back many times because this is a huge educational effort. Mary, let's start with your story. Would you be willing to share with our listening audience what birthday you recently celebrated if I tell them I'm 65?
Certainly. I feel privileged that I have celebrated my 97th birthday.
That is indeed a milestone, and I was there with you that day to celebrate with your friends and family and counted it an honor. But you almost didn't have a birthday. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, I like to start with that I first saw the light of day on January the 31st in the year 1917 because of my sainted mother refused to have to abort me when the doctor said it would take her life. She had had two previous children. I had two older sisters, one born in March of 12 and the other in January or April of 13. So they were 13 months apart, and they almost took her life, and the doctor said any more children following, it would take her life. So it was almost 4 years before I was conceived. And I did not learn this from my mother because my mother died when I was 14, and whether she never thought about it or I learned it later from aunts, and they told me how the doctor would rail upon her to please to abort. Did she want to leave two little girls to grow up without a mother? Needless to say, mother was too good a Christian, and she would not follow the door. And she had me and later had five more children.
My goodness.
Wow.
And it was not her children's birth that took her life. So I feel very, very privileged. I like to say that my life was spared, and I like to say that it was safe to serve because of the life that I have been privileged to have in the things that I have done, like from a governess in a children's home to home health care and the many, many thousands of hours of volunteer at children's at homes. It's just been a privilege, and so far the good Lord has spared my mind, and I still have a good memory.
You certainly do.
Back from, I can tell you, when I was 3 years old, when Warren Harding ran for president.
We're going way back, Mary, now.
Ask me about it. My dad went to vote on November the 2nd, 1920.
My gosh.
And I remember we had a great big sign in the window of Warren Harding. So that's the way I got my brother Warren.
Well, that is an incredible story, Mary. And lest we think that abortion is just a current issue, your life story certainly tells us that this has been something that's been going on for a long time. What a wonderful story of dedication on the part of your mother, and how doctors can be wrong. And I'm certain that the five siblings that followed you are very grateful for their lives as well. But with your mother dying at age 14, that didn't make an easy life for you.
No, it did not. I would like to add, I was raised a Lutheran, and I can always remember our pastor saying in confirmation school, we ought to obey God rather than man. And if ever that was, I'd make a statement come true, it would be that you don't listen to a doctor to kill when God says spare life.
Well, that is, your life is a living example of being obedient to the Lord. And I can share with our listeners that you are even now an active member of the Lutherans for Life organization in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and still contributing to the fight for life. How did you become involved in Lutherans for Life?
This is really interesting. I think when the very first thing started, I don't know how many years ago it was, but the pastor at our church asked me if he could put my name on to run to represent it. And I said, oh, there's other more qualified people. And he said, I didn't say you'd get it. I just want to put your name on. Well, I got it.
Did you know there probably weren't people standing in line, but we're grateful that you were willing to serve.
So that was the very beginning. And it started at the church where at Emmanuel, where they're now very active and doing things, that every once a month we went there on Sunday night to a meeting. Mm-hmm. And it just seems strange then that I was all these years and then that I get back into it. And I just feel so privileged, I think.
What was your mother's name, Mary? Because we'd certainly like to dedicate this program to her courage.
Oh, how beautiful. It was Martha Virginia Seitz.
Martha.
She always went by Jenny. She was Aunt Jenny to anybody. And my mother was an orphan when she was 9.
Oh.
So I really came from a very short life family. She was only 47 when she died, and my dad was 57. So
my goodness, she lived twice as long as your mother.
Yeah. Yeah. would hardly believe it, you know.
What a wonderful legacy, and it certainly is an honor and privilege to stand shoulder to shoulder with you, Mary, as we continue to fight for the precious lives of every unborn child, no matter the crisis, no matter the circumstances. My hat is off to you, and I am standing on your frail shoulders as we continue this fight. So thank you so much for sharing your story. Christy, let's turn to you. You have one of the most difficult stories of anybody I have ever heard, although they're all difficult. Share with our listeners the circumstances surrounding your life and your conception.
I was placed for adoption when I was born and found out about 13 years later, my parents found out, I did not, that I was actually conceived in rape and incest. And they had no idea until there was an article that was published in the local newspaper. And the article was titled, Father Gets 3 Years for a sex charge. And as they read through it and the description of what she went through went on for over 20 years, they got to a point that they saw the name of the father who was being charged. And at my adoption, they were given papers by my attorney, mistakenly, with my biological family's name on them. And the names matched.
Oh, my.
So the article in the newspaper revealed that I was conceived in rape and incest. And not only was I conceived, but there were also five other children conceived. Mm. And that I was the only survivor.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't imagine being in my adoptive parents' shoes when they read that article.
They had no idea until that point.
They had no idea. They only knew what I had known growing up. What they had told me was that my birth mother was very young. So up until that point of reading that article, that's all they knew.
Did you ever find out how it came about that you were the only survivor from six pregnancies?
The first pregnancy that resulted from the incest was when my biological mother was 13 years old. And it was a forced miscarriage through physical violence that the first pregnancy didn't survive.
Was the physical violence at the hands of
her father?
Her father, okay.
The second child was myself, and I was placed for adoption. And ironically, in the newspaper article, it says that the child that was placed for adoption was handicapped. That's exactly what the article says in the newspaper. And that's not the case at all. Now, the four pregnancies after my adoption were all ended through abortion. This was all to cover his crime. He did not want to be caught. And it took her many, many years to come forward with the information because she was afraid for her own life. And he held that, you know, that fear with her for so long that she didn't know how to come forward.
And that's fairly typical in a sexual abuse case. I've learned that fear and intimidation is what allows the perpetrator to continue. So do you think it would be fair to say that at least it is understandable that abortion actually protects the sexual abuser?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially in cases like this, because had he, you know, not had that option to force her to have the abortions or to physically abuse her and her miscarry the child, his actions would have likely been caught much, much sooner, and he would have had a great deal to pay for those actions. And instead, he served a very, very short sentence.
That's all the time we have this week. Tune in next week to hear the conclusion of Kathy Humbarger's conversation with Monica Kelsey, Mary Schramm, and Christy Hofferber.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to iChooseLife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.